Good afternoon. This is Lori with the Health Department. Today we have Roger Thompson, who's the regional manager for the district for the offices with the Department of Environmental Conservation, and he's going to speak with us today about water and wastewater and the role of town health officers.
Hi, this is Roger. I've got a few issues that we can talk about, but one of the things I'm really happy to do is take questions as we go along. So as I'm talking, if there's something that you want to pursue or expand on, just give me a shout and we'll try to deal with that as we go. I think what we're mostly going to concentrate on today is what's the relationship between DEC and the health officers. What's happened over the past few years relative to statutory changes and how it affects the tasks of the health officer? Going back just a little bit in history, there were some pretty significant changes back in 2002 that closed the 10-acre loophole and various and sundry things. But the big deal was, as of July 1 of 2007, there's universal jurisdiction out of the Department of Environmental Conservation over water and wastewater systems. Before that, there were a lot of systems that were not subject to our rules, and so we didn't have any authority to step in and require people to bring things into compliance, fix their failed systems, and at that point it was left up pretty much entirely to the town health officers. After you get to the July 1, 2007 date, we now have jurisdiction over all of those systems so that we can, in fact, help you folks deal with the problems that come up. That one of the things that some people misunderstand is some people think that the town health officer's authority was reduced in some fashion after the July 1, 2007 date when we had universal jurisdiction. And that's not correct. The town health officers still have all of the authority that they ever had relative to water and wastewater. They have the ability to, you know, go look at situations and see if they think there are problems. They have the ability to issue a health order requiring them to take action to fix things. The only difference is that now everybody needs to come to the state regional office in order to get a permit if they're going to do a replacement or a repair of a failed system. So we're very anxious to work with the local health officers and be supportive of you folks, that you guys are really the eyes on the ground, because you know you're much more apt to be aware of a failed system or a problem than we are. And obviously you folks can work on trying to resolve that. You can make contact with the property owner and encourage them to do what's necessary. But you can also refer those folks to us, that we do have the authority and the willingness to contact these people and help them get through the permit process and get into compliance. If they are unwilling to do that and we think they could do it, we are willing to take enforcement action. It's never our first choice, but we're willing to do that. But we really need your help in terms of helping identify the problem situations. We certainly get complaints coming directly to us, but I think a fair number of complaints for failed systems flow in through the network of town health officers. And we really appreciate that support, and we want to be here to support you. So anytime you have a situation out in your town that's a problem, feel free to contact one of the folks in one of our regional offices and talk to them about it, because we will work with you and help you get the folks through their problem of a failed system and get them back into compliance.
Is there a phone number they can call?
Well, there isn't a single phone number. Each of the five regional offices has a phone number, and I didn't bring that with me, but on the second page of my handout, the one that's entitled Health Officer Workshop, is a website, VermontSeptic.com. www.septic.vermont.gov, And if you go on there to the regional office section, you can look at the map and get the phone number if you don't already have it. And like I say, feel free to give those folks a call. Anything that you can give us for information makes our job easier, and we're willing to help support you in terms of getting those problems taken care of. One of the things that we see is, you know, when you're out there and you see a failed system that looks like an imminent health hazard, not only is sewage bubbling up, it's right in the front yard, you can and probably should give them short-term direction. Maybe tell them to put a fence around it. Maybe spread some lime on it. You know, flag it in some way to at least keep the kids and animals out of the area. So, because that's the sort of thing that you may be able to get quicker compliance on than we will. Certainly, if you come to us with a complaint, we can go investigate it. It needs to be something somewhat concrete. I'm sure you get the same kind of complaints we do, where somebody calls up and says, my neighbor's doing something bad. Well, what have you seen? Well, I haven't really seen anything. Well, then why do you know they're doing something bad? Well, because they're kind of bad people. Well, that's pretty hard for us to investigate, and I'm sure it's hard for you to investigate. But if you can tell us, gee, I was out there and I saw the backhoe and they're digging a big hole, or I was walked on the property and I see something on the ground that looks a lot like sewage, that's enough for us to be able to get involved and go out and take a look. So, like I say, I think this is a real place for us to cooperate. You folks being eyes on the ground and us folks coming along and helping people through the permit process. As I say, we can and will actually take action to require people to fix a failed system. That probably the hardest one, and a question that comes up frequently when I'm having these kinds of conversations, is what about situations where people don't have any money? Those are really tough. They're tough for you folks. They're tough for us. The only place that we really know of to refer people are to the NeighborWorks program. But nonetheless, if it's a real health hazard where somebody's water supply is likely to get contaminated, we will, you know, take action to try to get those things corrected. In terms of just exactly where does the line get drawn of a situation where a person needs a permit versus doesn't need a permit, we have a thing called minor repairs in our rules, and minor repairs can be done without having to get a permit. The two things that are clearly going to fit into that minor repair category are the replacement of a septic tank. So if somebody has a failed septic tank and wants to pull it out and replace it, or it's maybe not failed but they want to put in a bigger one, those are things they can do without needing to get a permit. There's also a provision for replacement of a failed, or not even failed, but replacement of a water supply for a single family home. Back when we got to universal jurisdiction, it was clear that the rules were going to require a permit for every replacement of a septic system, of a well, I'm sorry. And the well drillers said, gee, that's really going to be a problem for some folks because it may take you days or weeks to get a permit. We're in a situation where when somebody calls with a failed water supply, we may be able to go drill the well the next day or within 2 or 3 days. So we actually created an exemption in the rules that allows people, the landowner, to work with the well driller to put in a replacement water supply. This could also, there is an exemption that allows people to do a replacement shallow well. That's something that doesn't come up very often for us, but there is a process for that. On the website that I gave you a minute ago, there is guidance documents that talk about these things, and there are forms that can be used. There is a form that the landowner and the well driller have to fill out and file to show that they have used this exemption. But the basic rule of thumb is if they're doing anything other than replacing a water supply for a single family home, replacing a septic tank, or working on the piping between the house and the septic tank, they need to talk to the folks in the regional office because they likely will need to get a permit. And once again, you folks don't have to tell people they have to get a permit. Have them call us, and we'll talk to them and find out what's going on. And if they need a permit, we'll be the ones that will tell them that they need to get the permit.
So I have a question.
Okay.
A town health officer gets a call that says, from the complainant saying, I think I have a failed septic system. Can you walk us through how a town health officer should approach that complaint, what they should be looking for, what they should look for both inside the unit and outside the unit, how they should identify where the septic tank would be and where the leach field would be? How does one approach that complaint?
Okay, the first thing that I would be saying you ask is, do you think the problem is something occurring inside the building or something occurring outside of the building? If it's inside the building, in other words, you're getting odors or the drains are not flowing well, it's tending to back up, then I think that the first suspicion is going to be you might have a problem somewhere in the house or in the piping between the house and the septic tank. So you would suggest to the homeowner to start by digging up the septic tank. And once you get the septic tank open, you would look at the inlet end of the system and see if water is flowing from the house out into the septic tank. You could flush your toilet, run a faucet or something in the house, and see if the water comes running through rapidly, you know, quickly, shows up quickly, and seems to flow through at more or less the rate it's being discharged inside the house. If it is, then you're going to look further downstream. If it's not, then there's likely some sort of settlement or blockage in between. And so you're going to suggest to people that they arrange to have somebody come in with a sewer snake and route out the line. Some cases the homeowner could do that. And obviously the one thing as a health officer you're going to want to advise them is to, you know, minimize your contact with the sewage. You wash your hands after you're done and keep the equipment away from people. Just kind of basic common sense things, but those are important. If it's an odor problem in the house but no apparent sewage, that might be kind of a plumber type question. You'd be wondering, is there odor coming in from the outside of the house being drawn back in through the windows or doors or something? Or is it leaking in the pipe? I mean, we actually see breaks in the pipe inside the walls and so on that can produce an odor, but that's probably something for a plumber to track down. So assuming it's not showing up between the house and the tank, but you're still having problems of it backing up into the house, that probably will show up as a surcharge condition in the tank. The tank will be full right up to the lid as opposed to being maybe 6 or 8 inches down, which is kind of the normal level for a tank. If that's true, then you're going to look at the outlet pipe and see if there's any break or block at the outlet end of the septic tank. If that looks good, then you're going to have to do the best you can to find the leach field and see if there's any indication of sewage backing up in that area. The person who comes and pumps the septic tank usually has a pretty good read on what's happening relative to those functions. So that's a professional that you would likely call on in trying to deal with that particular part of the situation. The question was asked, well, how do you find the septic tank? Because a lot of people don't know where the septic tank is. And there aren't any really easy ways to do that. There actually are technologies now. They have ground-penetrating radar that is used for finding all sorts of underground structures. There is one consultant in Heartland that has this radar and could come survey it. More likely, people are going to go into the house, determine where the pipe goes out of the house. That's likely that it goes in that general direction. I mean, it could come out and make a sharp bend, but typically goes out. You might take a sewer snake and go inside the building and run it down the pipe as far as it can go. If it gets to the tank, it will come up against the baffle, so you can then measure the amount of sewer snake, and that will tell you how far out from the house to look. Otherwise, probably it just gets a situation of you're just going to have to dig, going to have to start at the house and follow the pipe down. But this is really good reason to find out where it is before you have a problem in the middle of the winter or sometime. It's a really good reason why in the new rules we require all of the systems to have manhole accesses running all the way up to grade. Because once you have one, A, you know where it is, and B, you're much more likely to maintain your septic tank because now you can do it easily as opposed to major amounts of excavation. Did I cover what you're looking for there? Good. Any other questions as we're going along here?
So I just want to be clear. If a town health officer is called by someone that has what appears to be pooling septic fluid on the surface, the action steps a town health officer should take at that point are...
Okay, I would say that the first thing that you're going to do is try to segregate the sewage from contact with the people, maybe the fencing, maybe the lime.
So that means that you tell the landlord they must put a fence in place and that they must put straw down and lime down?
Yes, I think that's exactly the kind of thing to say. I think the next two steps are contact the regional office and contact somebody to come and pump the septic tank. Because our first thing is if somebody has sewage on the ground and it's right near where the house is or threatening a water supply or where the kids are, we're going to say you need to abate that as quickly as you can. And the fastest way to do that is to get in there and pump the septic tank and keep it pumped. Once you do that, the sewage that's on the surface of the ground is normally going to dissipate pretty quickly, soak back into the ground. And as long as you keep the septic tank pumped, it's not going to reoccur. Now, that's expensive. And so people are not going to want to do that any longer than they have to, which is going to give them some encouragement to get into the process and work with us in terms of getting it fixed. So tell them they need to pump the tank. That's what we'll tell them if it comes to us. And we'll tell them the next thing is to hire a consultant to come out and evaluate your system and see if it's something that can be fixed maybe with a minor repair. Or not, if it's not a minor repair, then it's going to go ahead and design the replacement system.
So, Roger, I printed off the numbers of your regional offices, which I think you said there are five. So I'll read off the names of the offices for you, for the town health officers. There's one in Barrie, and the phone number is 802-476-0190. The one in Essex is 879-5656. The one in Rutland is 786-5900. And then there's one in Springfield that's 885-8855. And then finally in St. Johnsbury, and the number is 751-0130.
If a tenant is concerned about a failing septic system, can the tenant still use the toilet, or should they be asked not to, or how do you instruct tenants in regards of using the toilet if they think their septic has failed?
Well, clearly you have to be able to use the toilet. You have to have drinking water, otherwise you can't occupy the building. So I don't think it's reasonable for us or the landlord to tell the tenants you can't use the facilities. If the landlord is saying that, then, you know, who knows, maybe the landlord should be providing alternative housing or something. My understanding, and the folks here in the room can answer this better than I, but my understanding is generally the health officer doesn't have the authority to tell somebody to vacate the building. They do have the authority to tell them to abate the health hazard, which is likely going to be the combination of pumping a septic tank and the fencing and the liming and the hay, those kinds of interim measures. And at that point, hopefully, we'll be able to get geared up and my folks will be able to get involved, be in contact with the landowner. And that's one of the other things that the town officials can help us with is if you can give us contact information, if you can give us name, phone number, mailing address, the things that we're going to have to get hold of in order to contact the landowner. So any of that stuff you can provide is really useful for us.
If there's a failing septic tank and the landlord doesn't want to voluntarily pump immediately, do you think this is an indication for an emergency health order?
Well, sewage on the surface of the ground is considered an imminent health hazard. So I would say that, and once again, I'm not supervising the health officers, but I would think that they would, at that point, be the basis of issuing an emergency health order if the landowner is not being cooperative. Obviously, there's a little judgment involved in that, and it's probably going to be handled slightly differently if the sewage that's surfacing is, you know, 200 feet away from the house, down over the bank, not threatening anybody's water supply. You may feel less obligated to get an emergency health order than if it's right in the front yard of a four-family apartment building next to the parking area where the kids walk back and forth. So I think there's going to be some judgment there. But in terms of, is there a basis for doing it? I would say that there is.
How do you know whether a failed septic system is compromising the water supply?
Yeah, I mean, that basically that's the best thing you can do, but and I certainly would. If there was the least doubt on my mind, I would say certainly run the basic suite looking for fecal coliform, maybe nitrate, anything else that is likely to show up immediately in the well.
E. coli and coliform.
Yeah. And the one thing that you do have to be aware of is you could still have contamination in the water supply, and it might not show up in those basic tests because there are certain things like the viruses, which are the things that we most care about, don't show up on those tests, and it's not very practical to test for that. So testing is one of those things that if it shows contamination, then there's something to worry about. If it doesn't show contamination, it doesn't mean that things are safe. But certainly testing will be the very first thing. And in terms of how high the risk is, there's a lot of just common sense. If you've got a shallow water supply, and if you could imagine that during a heavy rainstorm, the rain falling on the leach field would run to the shallow well, and there's sewage on the ground, I think that's a very high risk. If it's a sewage on the ground and it looks like it's running away from a drilled well, that might be an issue, particularly if the two are really close, but I don't see it as being a high risk because the surfacing sewage is being diverted away from the well as opposed to towards it. So a lot of that's going to be very case specific.
Roger, can you remind us the level that the E. coli and the coliform should be at, and also who pays for the test?
Well, the level should be zero. You know, the basic standard is there shouldn't be any of that stuff in the water. In terms of who pays for the test, I suspect that in some cases the town health officers collect a sample and send it in. The tenant might, if you had a tenant situation, they might choose to do it just to reassure themselves. We would step in more in terms of telling the landowner that he's got a failed septic system and needs to hire somebody to fix it, keep it pumped in the meantime. I guess we probably would also take a position if it looked like there was a high risk of threatening the water supply. We might very well, actually we'd probably call the health department and consult with them and see if we should, between us, say it needs a boil water notice and provide bottled water for consumption.
How, for someone that does not know very much about wells, how does someone identify where the well may be on the property in relation to the septic tank if they're not sure where the septic tank is?
Well, that's the big problem, is in most cases you can find the well.
How?
Not always.
How?
But The two obvious signs of wells in Vermont are going to be the 8-inch round casing sticking up out of the ground, or some kind of spring house. It may be made out of wood or concrete blocks. It could be laid up stone. Typically has some sort of cover on it, though that's one of the things you find if you're out looking around. You'll find people drinking water out of a spring that has an old caved-in cover on it, and they're perfectly happy, so it's been doing good for them, but most of the rest of us would look at it and say that's kind of exposing the source to needless contamination. One of the well type that's hard to find is 40 years ago when people drilled wells, they didn't have good measures for protecting the pipe from the well to the house from freezing. We have now what's called pitless adapters, which is a device that allows you to bore a hole in the side of the well casing 6 feet down in the ground and bring the pipe out through the side of the casing. In the old days, they brought the pipe out of the top of the casing. And to deal with a freezing problem, they would dig a pit down around the well casing and they would cut off the casing 3-4 feet below ground and bring the pipe out of the top. And then they would cover this thing up. So it would be in, you know, maybe a little concrete well curb with a cover over it. Those are hard to find. Hopefully the landowner knows where they are, because they were mostly dug so long ago that it would be iffy in terms of tracking down the well driller and finding out where it was. But that's one of the things that we have a program, and the Health Department has a program of, when you find these things, requiring them to extend the well casing above grade. The big problem with the below grade ones are, if the well pit fills up with water and the seal on top of the well casing is not perfect, the groundwater can go into the well casing. So that's something that is very strongly discouraged for any new water supply.
Are there any other questions?
Yes, this is Carrie Leonard in Richford. I received a call last week from a tenant in a trailer who said she has a lot of sandy grit in her water. Her filter was recently changed about 2 weeks ago. And I called her yesterday and she said it's worsened. How can I help her?
Okay, the first question I'd ask is this a mobile home park that has 10 or more units in it?
No, it's an individual trailer on a farm.
Individual trailer on a farm. I would probably suggest that they contact the well driller maybe and see if they have anything that suggests what might have happened. That sometimes when you drill wells, the well driller discovers that it has fine particles in it. It could be sand, or it could be particularly drilling in shale and so on. You get very fine particles that can be very cloudy, and so they might have a history of that. They might know that was a problem from the beginning. Your description is something that doesn't seem to happen a lot in terms of really quickly with an existing water supply. They would be more apt to find this kind of a problem if somebody had a water supply that had been unused for a period of time and then they turned it back on and used it at a relatively high intensity. But I'm not really sure what you would think, what would come to mind if you had something that had never had this problem and then all of a sudden started having it. The one thing you might be looking at is this a very old well, and it's actually rusted through the well casing right at an intersection where the seasonal water table occurs in the springtime, that where the water table, just like a fence post, it rots or rusts right at the level where the water table is. So you could actually, if the casing is old enough, rust a hole in the casing so groundwater is seeping in, and that could be bringing in some sand.
And so did you say that it only occurred at the change of the filter?
Correct.
When the filter was changed. And do we know what type Do we know what type of filter was put on the system?
No, I don't.
I mean, it could be a product of the filter itself. If it wasn't there prior to the filter and then it was there after the filter, I mean, a question would be, if the filter was removed, does the grit still appear? And if the answer is no, I would suggest that we just consider changing the filter as well. There might be a defect in the filter, or if it is a, there are some fine sand filters out there that could, for some reason, it might have been installed incorrectly. There, but it sounds like also there should be some questions about the filter itself.
Okay, thank you. I do have one other question. In talking about failed systems, is the health officer responsible for facilitating the process, getting another system or getting the system to work, or do we just assist the landlord, the owner?
Well,
I can answer that. Why don't we both answer that? So I would say your role is primarily to point out that is, if it's in a rental property, is primarily to point out that a failed system is not in compliance with the rental housing code. Then it is really up to the landlord to fix the problem themselves. Now, if there is frank sewage or if there is sewage all over the place, because of the imminent health hazard, you may want to facilitate on the more rapid, at least blocking access to that. It is not your responsibility to tell a landlord how to fix their failed septic or to facilitate them fixing it. It's your responsibility merely to require that they do fix it. But sometimes if you're knowledgeable and you're helping them along, it's just a nice thing to do, but you're not required. It is their own responsibility to address this problem.
And the two best things to help facilitate that probably is to tell the landlord to call the regional office, and then call the regional office and tell us the name and location and so on, so that we can be following up if the landlord doesn't contact us. Because at the point where there is a failed system, we have the ability, the authority, and the willingness to make that contact and pressure the person to go through the permit process and actually repair the system. So if you can get the information to us, we can help carry the ball in terms of getting them into compliance.
Thank you.
Additional questions?
Yes, this is Jennifer Silpe from Underhill, Vermont. I have a case where I was contacted by a tenant. I was actually called in because there was mold on the walls, which is not the topic of today's discussion. But when I was there and my complete inspection, I also found out from the tenants that their water didn't taste right and that there was something wrong with the water, and they never drank it. And I did a water test, and the water test tested positive for a total coliform. And when I asked the tenants if they were aware, you know, where the septic system was and where the well was, and she'd been there for over 2 years, had the septic system been pumped, the tenant said that they were having some problem with backup in the house with the septic, and that she took me out in the yard and showed me a place right out in, basically opposite the bathroom, where he had, quote-unquote, dug a hole and done something in the dirt, the landlord. But I don't even see any evidence of a septic system or anything there. And when I called the town and talked to our zoning person, there's nothing on record. They called the state, and they had nothing on record as far as any kind of, you know, permit or system, which may just mean that it's old. But I have written a letter to the landlord and have given them 7 days to contact me and respond to several things. But I'm not sure, even if I go back on site, what I'm looking for. I walked around and didn't see anything. I don't even see any signs where there's a cement cover where a septic tank is located.
Okay. I think you're headed exactly in the right direction in terms of contacting landowner and asking to hear their side of the story, because that's obviously the first thing you want to do is hear the other side of the story. The next question would be is, if you check back with the tenants, are they still having problems with the pipes draining poorly? If the pipes are draining perfectly well and there's no real evidence of the that we could, you know, charge the landowner with rebuilding a septic system without a permit, then I might say it looks like this is something to just kind of keep an eye on and see if we get more complaints. If it's still backing up into the house, that's a failed system, and we would be happy to get the information from you in terms of name and address, and we can contact the landowner and just let them know that it's more than the town that's interested in what's going on here. Because certainly if we don't get a satisfactory answer or it looks like there's real reason to pursue it, we can do that. I mean, we actually have investigators. We have the environmental enforcement officers. And if somebody has given us a hard time, we can ask one of those folks to go out and talk to them. It's not like probably sending out a police officer, but it is somebody who's trained in collecting information and knows how to go about doing that. And it just kind of raises the intensity of the situation and makes it clear that the state's not going to just, you know, put this under the carpet and go away. We want to find out what's going on. Now, even at that point, we still are asking the landowner to tell us their side of the story, because, you know, sometimes the tenant and the landlord are having a dispute, and it's the tenant who's kind of off base. Sometimes it's a landowner. So we never go into it with a presumption that the landowner is a bad guy, but we will go out and ask the questions and try to find out what's going on.
So this is Austin Sumner, too. I wanted to follow up that question as well. Thank you, Roger. So there sounds to me like there's more than one issue going on at this property. The first issue that you reported was is that the drinking water had a bad taste, and then you tested it for coliform, and it came back positive. That there is a violation of the sanitation section of the rental housing code, where potable water needs to be provided. If there's coliform bacteria present, then these tenants really should not be drinking this water. As a temporary measure, the landlord should be providing bottled water to those tenants until a more permanent solution can be arrived at. So I would certainly notify the landlord in writing that he's in non-compliance with the rental housing code and that he needs to imminently address the potable water in the form of bottled water supply while they're addressing the drinking water, the more permanent drinking water solution. In addition to the failed septic, Roger, this would be a question. Would it be worthwhile, just because the toilet's not flushing, even if there's not pooling septic, should the town health officer in this case ask or require the landlord to hire a plumber to come and investigate and understand what's going on? Or would you rather they just contact your regional office for help?
Well, if in fact the plumbing is continuing to run slowly and not drain, they need to do something about it. And I think the health officer certainly could tell the landlord, this is a problem, it's a violation of the rental code, you need to do something about it. You can also, at the same time, be working with us so that we can be helping you folks do that. And I kind of missed the whole point there when I was talking about the septic system. Your description is two-pronged. It is both water and sewer. And we can do the same things on the water system. If there's a report of a failed water system, we can order the landowner to contact us and answer the question of what the problem is. In some cases, it could be as simple as, you know, going through and disinfecting the system. But if there's coliform in the well, it means there's a pathway from the outside into the well, and you ought to find out what it is, because it could be serious, might not be, but it could be serious.
Yes. And so one final thing is that it is a requirement of the rental housing code also that toilets flush. And so if the toilets are not flushing, I don't remember the exact reference, I just saw the top of my head, but those are two violations or two areas of non-compliance with the rental housing code. The landlord should be informed of those two areas and that some action should be taken. So you don't necessarily need to dictate the action is what's important, but you have you should inform them that these are violations, they need to be corrected within a time period, and you don't necessarily have to be prescriptive about how they correct them. But certainly I think calling the regional office for additional assistance is a great idea.
Well, and we will be prescriptive of how they fix them.
You will.
So,
yes.
So if you can get them to us, then we can kind of take that burden and run with it.
Great. Well, I have a pretty confident idea that I will not hear from them within the 7 days that I asked to hear from them. So someone in the regional ethics office will be hearing from me.
Yes, and you don't even have to wait for the 7 days if you don't want. You can get the information to the regional offices so that we're at least aware of it and get geared up.
Okay, and I did in writing say to them that in my letter I said, furthermore, water tested positive and that you are in violation of the rental housing code, and I also told them that because the tenants have since moved out, that given my findings, the dwelling is not, at a minimum, in compliance with the housing codes and is in violation, and that these issues must be addressed before someone else occupies the dwelling. So I'm hoping that she'll take that seriously and contact me.
That sounds excellent. It's reassuring to know that there's not an imminent hazard because there's nobody currently in the building, but I certainly agree with that. Unfortunately, we have gone 15 minutes over our anticipated time. I know that's partly my fault. I'm hoping there's not any additional questions, although Roger, will you certainly be available if people have additional questions offline?
Oh, absolutely. And
can you give a number?
Yeah, my phone number is 241-3027, and absolutely feel free to call at any time.
Excellent.
That was 241-3027?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much, Roger, and that concludes our talk on septic tanks. Thank you, everyone, for calling in.